My name's Dr. Sarah Metcalf, one of the medical editors of Australian Family Physician. And on the theme of workplace for this month's edition, Dr. Peter Fenner has written an article on returning to work after injury. Dr. Fenner's a general practitioner and associate professor at the School of Public Health, Tropical Medicine and Rehabilitation Sciences at James Cook University. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you.
Thanks for your time today. So as we know, workplace injury cases can be very challenging for GPs, but certainly the evidence states that if workers have prolonged periods away from the job, there's increased likelihood that this will have a long-term impact and even that they may never return to work at all. With this in mind, it's important that as GPs we manage these cases as well as we can. You place emphasis on the importance of early and thorough initial assessment of workplace injury and formulation of a working diagnosis. Could you just run us through that initial assessment process, please?
It's probably just the basic examination that we were taught in medical school, which for some of us was a long time ago. Yes. For others, it's a bit more recent. But it is, as you say, just a simple examination. There's a tendency these days for people to rush straight in, see someone with back pain or any injury and immediately want to get an X-ray or CT scan or something to diagnose the injury. This is totally wrong.
Yeah.
What we need to do is examine the people carefully, all the systems that are involved, particularly around an injury, which is usually musculoskeletal or similar, and very often in the back, to go over the area quite carefully and note the areas of tenderness, the movements that aggravate it, everything about it. And it's usually pretty easy to get a fairly good working diagnosis. And with that working diagnosis, the idea is to treat them on that diagnosis. You needn't investigate it because
yes.
It's already been shown that if you get X-rays, CT scans or MRIs of the whole population, that up to 30% will have an abnormal one, but are functioning perfectly with no pain, no problem. So this isn't the adult way to diagnose it, and it's unnecessary. You work out the diagnosis, get it treated, and really the most important thing is mobilisation. Even though something's painful, the faster you get it mobilised, the better it is. Now, that's somewhat against what we were taught again at medical school, in that if there's an injury, you rest.
Yep.
We get it mobilised as soon as possible, and it does actually get quicker, better. Could give a good example. I mean, you're carrying a heavy shopping bag in your hand, and it's fairly heavy and your hands are gripped around it, and then eventually you put it down and your hands caught around it and trapped. It's painful, you know, all the muscles are in spasm. Well, as everyone realises, the sooner you can get those muscles off the bag and mobilised and wiggle your fingers, remarkably it gets better.
Yeah.
This is the same basic principle for rehabilitation.
That's probably a good analogy to use with patients, because I think often getting that concept across to patients, you know, especially if as doctors ourselves we don't have a good understanding of it, can be quite challenging, can't it?
Well, it is, as you say, kind of doctors sometimes speak in doctory language, and they really need to speak, you know, basic Australian. I nearly said English. So that patients understand. And even if you kind of try to say, oh, well, it's all due to muscle spasm, it's frequently as if you're kind of putting the person down and saying, well, you know, you're a bit of a wuss, you've only got muscle spasm there, you know, get up and walk. But muscle spasm, as we realise, is a very painful thing.
Yes.
And the sooner you can get people up and mobilised, the faster they're going to get better.
Yeah, so effective early treatment is important, and mobilisation is part of that. Obviously, you know, in the early stages of the injury, we're looking at immediate management to help with their pain. Are there any particular things you'd suggest there?
You mean to help with the pain?
Yeah, some sort of immediate management pain control suggestions.
Well, I tend to use a lot of physiotherapy. They're very good at getting things mobilised, but obviously a bit of basic pain relief. Paracetamol is as good as anything and better than most.
Yep.
We do have slow-release paracetamol, which if taken regularly gives a quite a reasonable continuous level of pain management, which is a bit better than just taking two Panadol every 6 hours or so when you're getting pain relief and then no pain relief, pain relief, etc.
Yeah.
So they're usually very helpful. Very often an anti-inflammatory is important. You need to, again, inquire in case a person gets heartburn, indigestion or any similar complaints. Because a lot of people do these days.
Yes.
And if so, you need to treat that at the same time because anti-inflammatories are important.
Yes.
Control of muscle spasm is also kind of useful sometimes, particularly in backs and particularly if patients having trouble sleeping. Baclofen is very good for kind of this sort of thing, or even Valium. There's a lot of controversy over that, but it certainly does kind of give them a reasonable sleep, and so long as you're not using it long term, I really see no problem with it.
Yeah, okay. And then, of course, there's the sort of more physical things like cold packs and heat packs, you know, depending on what the issue is.
While the person's in the surgery, you really need them on cold packs until they settle down.
Yep.
Cold packs are the best for the immediate injury, and heat packs are very, very useful later on as the original injury kind of inflammation settles down and you're getting more muscle spasm.
Great. Okay. So sort of moving beyond those early stages where it's, you know, really important to get those basic things in place, how do we then go about formulating a return to work plan?
Well, I think the most important is to speak to the patient or the injured person, explaining to them the principles we just mentioned, that things that don't move rust, and let's kind of get it moving, and it's going to help you better, although there may be a bit of discomfort on the way.
Yeah.
People must realise that pain doesn't necessarily mean bad things, and if there's a pain there, they're making it worse. Again, going back to the analogy of the carrier bag, I mean, once you get over that cramping and get it mobilised, it's a lot better.
Yeah.
So this is important if you explain it to them. And if they, as doctors were originally taught, rest is kind of good for things to settle down. It isn't, as has been discovered through, you know, sports medicine and rehabilitation medicine. Get them back to work. Yes, they can work. They may have an injury, but they can go back. What they can do at home, they can do at work. This may be sitting down, doing billing or labelling or similar such things.
Yep.
So long as they're not sitting too long, depends, 20 to 30 minutes sitting, and then get up, move around, walk around, stretch. Standing for a long period isn't advisable, but for a short period is okay.
Yeah.
You can slowly get people mobilised and doing things as close as possible to their normal work.
Right, and so the workers feeling like they're still making a contribution, which is good for the psychological side of things.
It certainly is. As you said earlier, that the fact that work is really an important part of rehabilitation, and it's part of the treatment, and doing nothing just delays recovery. It's going to take them longer to get back to work, and the longer they're away from work, the more likely they are to get depressed. And isolated from their normal kind of work places.
Yeah.
It helps them.
Yeah. So, you know, as a GP, we'd be sort of heavily involved in that return to work plan. Obviously, communication's really the key here. And I think you may mention, obviously, most states and territories have the standardised work cover paperwork, but I think your suggestion was that rarely is that going to be sufficient in this process.
No, it isn't. They very often change the forms to make them a bit more complex and put more dates in, which is just confusing. But there's basic things that people can do or can't do, and you can tick that off. Very often, rehabilitation officer will come from the company with them, and obviously you've got to protect the person's own personal kind of areas. But once you've spoken to the patient, got it all organised, you can tell them what they can and they can't do, and frequently they'll turn around and tell you, well, you know, there's no work like that I can do. And say, well, look, this isn't our job. This is the job of the rehabilitation officer.
I see.
And with their permission, you can get the rehabilitation officer in and tell them, right, the person can do this, he can't do that, and go through the list. And they make notes on it, and then what happens is they go back and formulate the return to work plan and advise on different jobs, different tasks that can be done at work. Some of these people are really good at it and can make the task very worthwhile. Others aren't, but if we can get that plan underway, and it's important that the rehabilitation officer signs it off to say that he's compiled it, it's important that the injured worker reads it through and they're happy that those tasks that they can do. And one of the restrictions that I always include is cheating a bit, really. It just says, don't do anything that makes the pain increase too much in intensity.
Yes.
And that, then if anything like that happens, they can discuss it with the rehab officer.
Yep.
But once the injured worker's happy and the doctor's happy, it can be signed off. And then the most important thing is that they're reviewed regularly. It's not a question of, right, that's it, it's going to take 6 weeks to get better, go off and do that. I mean, for the first week, they're going to be greatly restricted. It's probably necessary to see them, you know, within a week.
Right.
And then re-review how they're progressing. Now, this can be a bit daunting for the GP at times if they're not used to that sort of thing.
Yep.
But if they're using a physiotherapist, particularly one that they can actually kind of choose from the Australian Physio website, a physio that specialises in work and work cover injuries, or any sort of injury, should I say, that they can help advise on lifting limits and movements, this, that and everything else. And they can assist greatly that way if the doctors push for time, which usually they are.
Yeah.
But at least you're overseeing the problem.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions, I guess, because it's clearly a collaborative process that involves lots of different health professionals, both, you know, from the employer's side but also the treatment side. And GPs are well placed to coordinate it. How do you suggest sort of, I guess, managing that in terms of time, having time to make phone calls and return phone calls and just managing that side of it when you're in a busy practice? Are there any sort of tips and suggestions?
No, but if anyone's got any, I'd like them. it's just one of those difficult things. You try to get it all done at the time, but frequently these injuries come in, it's busy.
Yeah.
You may need to reschedule them, bring them back at another time to make sure that you've got the time to go through it. And then it's just coordinating and keeping informed by what I always do is make kind of complete notes each time I see them, and then I cheat. I just copy and paste it straight into letters to the physiotherapist, to work cover so that they know what's going on, to the rehabilitation officer, leaving out any kind of details, medical details for them, but give them an idea of what's going on.
Yes.
And any other people that are involved in the injury rehabilitation.
Yeah, and these are ones too where I guess I think there's a case conference sort of number that could be relevant in these sorts of cases if you're able to get people in the same place at the same time.
Well, exactly. A case conference is very useful. You can do it by phone if necessary. And WorkCover do pay a lot more for a case conference. They appreciate that time that it takes the doctors. And if you get everybody's view at the same time, bearing in mind that the injured worker must be present or must be, know what's going on, because they're part and parcel of the whole treatment, and we're not discussing about them while they're not there. We're discussing the treatment between ourselves that can is all designed to help them, and usually they're kind of fairly pleased that's the way it's going, that all these people have a kind of interest in getting them back to work as quickly as possible and getting them returning to their normal duties as quickly as possible. So
they're more
helpful.
Yeah. So we've mentioned physiotherapy as an active treatment that we might use during this rehabilitation. Do you want to just mention some of the other things that might be useful in the process?
Well, there's one of the very early providers that sometimes we're thinking about, because it crops up awfully often, is counselling. If somebody has an injury, and then particularly if it's a back injury, where the patients, or should I say the injured workers, have all heard these terrible stories about, oh, you know, you get back pain and then you've got a problem there and then you're going to lose your work and then you're going to be in a wheelchair all your life. And I've never yet seen one, but anyway, these stories go around. And immediately anxiety makes the injury worse. So work cover are usually quite happy for what's called adjustment to injury counselling. They get a certain number of sessions where a psychologist teaches them to assess the situation and reassure them and try and stop the anxiety about it. Because, as we know, a toothache in the middle of the night is fairly severe, and you toss and turn in agonizing pain.
Yes.
You wake up in the morning, you're late for work, you have to rush out to work, and you're sitting at work at smoko time and suddenly think, oh, I've still got that toothache, I must do something about it sometime. How they perceive the work in the darkness and the light, so to speak, is very important.
Absolutely, Okay, and so and that's probably about addressing barriers to getting people back as well, being a bit proactive with counselling and things like that. Is that really the main thing you see as a barrier to getting people back, the psychological side?
There's always an awful lot of the implications of the psychological side that influence the return to work. Those who really want to return to work and have no problems at work get better very, very quickly. And those that have a bad workplace atmosphere or problems at work, who don't enjoy their work, lots of outside factors that can affect it, they're the ones that usually kind of take a lot longer to settle down.
Yes. And another thing I found interesting in the article that I didn't realise, you mentioned that there are avenues if the worker's particular company is not able to provide appropriate tasks while the worker's rehabilitating.
Yes, this sometimes happens where, particularly in the long term, they'll adapt usually for the short term, but in the long term, they haven't got the work that's available for that person. Again, they realise the importance of work for the person to keep their psychological side intact, and so they will arrange what's called a host employer.
Right.
And a host employer is one that, you know, perhaps doesn't have such physical demands, and but they can do useful work in a different sort of trade or a different sort of working environment. The patient, the injured worker, is happy to go to, and there's no comeback on that host company if there is any further problems, so long as the person sticks to the work cover plan, the return to work plan, and the company doesn't expect them to do anything further than that. And so it usually works very well, and then as soon as they're improved generally in themselves, they can go back to work, their full-time work.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, so in summary, Peter, what would you say are the most important aspects of managing these workplace injury cases for GPs?
I go back to the original. The most important thing is a good initial assessment of the injury, getting the history of it, how it happened, examining them, working out the diagnosis, even if it is provisional, and treating it first. If you fail to make progress, or if there are so-called red flags or anything else that's out of the ordinary, if they continue to make progress, you don't need to do anything else except review them and progressively stress the injured area. Trying to become fit as an athlete, you start off slowly and build it up so that the person gets stronger and stronger. The other muscles of the body are already being used, and so the person remains work hardened, and so it just means they can get back to their tasks faster. Assessment of the patient is important. Really effective early treatment, as you said, the cold packs, analgesia, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, and treatment such as physiotherapy or mobilization. Good rehabilitation, good follow-up, and usually it comes to a really good outcome very quickly.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thanks so much, Peter, for taking us through that, because it certainly can be a daunting area. But yes, following the basic rules, as with anything else, we can expect good outcomes.